Well, it's just a great privilege to be here, especially on Mother's Day as well, and try to impart something helpful to you all. And I can assure you that y'all's church has imparted things to mine and been helpful to us. The subject that I'd like to speak to you all on is the appeal to providence from the book of Philemon. So if you'll turn to Philemon and look at just verses 15 to 16. We will try to study these for these moments this morning and see if the Lord can help us. Philemon chapter 1 is only one chapter, but verse 15 and 16, it reads as follows. Paul says, "For perhaps he was for this reason separated from you for a while, that you would have him back forever, no longer as a slave, but more than a slave, a beloved brother, especially to me, and how much more to you, both in the flesh." I'd like to pray one more time. Lord, I thank you so much for this moment. I thank you for all the saints here gathered here. Thank you for all the gatherings of your churches around the world. It's just so very good to be here. And Lord, we look to you and we look to you to help us today to understand this and really draw something out of this that can really matter to our lives. We don't just want to hear a sermon, Lord, but we want to be doers. We want to hear the relevance of your word to life, to redeem our lives. And so be with us. I pray, help us to get out of these two verses what we were meant to get out of these two verses. In Jesus' name, amen. So, just 3 years before he died, Bach got a chance to travel to Prussia. He had one of his children live there, his son, he'd been wanting to visit. And so he went, and of course by now he was a little more well known, so he met the king of Prussia. But the king of Prussia was not a fan of Bach. He didn't like him, and so almost as a form of spite, when he was there, he gave Bach a little tune, a little melody, and asked him to play it on the piano. He asked him to produce a three-part fugue right there on the spot. He basically said, "You're the great Bach, and you can extemporize with anything. So here you go." And he gave him this very lopsided, awkward, unfitting, unpleasant melody to do something with. And of course, Bach did it. But after that, he said, "Well, I bet you can't do a six-part fugue." And Bach later did the six-part fugue. But when he got back home, he thought, "I think I can do better than that." So he went to work on it more, and he produced a 16-piece set called the Musical Offering. And he sent it back to the king. Had a little note on the front of it, a musical offering for your highness, the main theme of which proceeded from your own lofty hand. And it's one of his well-known masterpieces. Bach was very different than the artists we think of today. We think of art today as just splattering out subjectivity on a page. So we think of it as freedom from limitations, having no limitations. It's not how Bach thought of it. He thought about it as freedom within limitations. So putting limitations on him and then him creatively coming up with something beautiful through them. And I tell you that story here at the beginning because I think of it when I come to these verses, because Paul really is presenting something very much like that to Philemon. In order to get Philemon to do what he's hoping and persuading him to do. You know the story. Paul has been in prison, and a man who was a runaway slave runs into Paul in prison. He's converted through Paul's ministry, but he belongs to Philemon. He's wronged Philemon in certain ways, and so Paul knows he's got to send him back, that he would like to have him with him. And so he just writes this very short letter that we have in the canon, but it is filled with big theology as well when we take the time to look at it. And so he makes these various appeals through here, and we're just looking at the second one this morning. This second appeal is an appeal to providence, where he tries to get Philemon to consider this situation from the perspective of providence, and that motivate him to do what he wants him to do. It has four parts, as Paul lays it out here. It involves an appeal to a providential act, a providential purpose, a providential gift, and then a providential response. And so we'll take those as the four points of the sermon. So first of all, Paul makes this appeal to providence to Philemon by appealing to a providential act. You notice in verse 15 he says, "For," so he's going to give him another reason to do this. And then he says, "Perhaps." This word in the Greek is kata, apocardia, quick. It's the kind of inference you draw. One time someone came into our office and the coffee pot was on, and I heard them in there. They said, "Jeffrey must be here." It's just kind of quick inference you draw when something seems very likely, very probable, very obvious. And that's the word Paul uses here for perhaps. He says, "For perhaps, Philemon," there seems to be a conclusion that makes sense to draw here. "Consider," and he says, "he was separated from you," the passive verb. Now, it's true that Philemon didn't push him away, right? Onesimus left on his own. Philemon was completely passive in this. But he's not referring to a human passive here. He's signaling and shifting the conversation here. Paul's a master pastor, and he's trying to get Philemon to see this is a divine passive. He was separated from you in the sense that God did it. So, Philemon, what if it wasn't just Onesimus who was acting here? What if it was God also? And so he's appealing to a doctrine we deal with in systematic theology called concurrence. It's a subheading under the doctrine of providence. So you have preservation. God is holding all the universe together. You have concurrence, which means in every action of every whale, of every human, of every bug, God is also acting. Jesus said, "My Father is always working." In Him, Paul said, we live and move and have our being. So the only reason we can move is because God is moving in our moving. He's sustaining us. Job says, if he should draw back his spirit, he would all perish and expire. So that's concurrence. Governance is that God is carrying creation along towards its goal. So it's that second one Paul's appealing to here. Con means with. Current is like a river. It means to run. So to run with. So you have this these two lines ideas. As one thing is happening, another is happening with it. So you might think in the book of Acts, the apostles basically say, was it the Roman soldiers that crucified Jesus and Pilate and Herod, or was it God who crucified Jesus? Both. When someone gets married, is it the pastor and the bride and the groom who is acting, or is it God who is joining something together? Both. All these examples. Did Macbeth kill Duncan, or did Shakespeare kill Duncan? Well, both. He wrote the story and he acted it out. So, Paul is bringing that up here, and he's reminding Onesimus of something we forget. We forget this, that, distract me for a second. I thought something was wrong. We forget that there's always two actors in every action. So he subtly reminds, Philemon's no doubt just been viewed, prone to look at this situation as, this was my slave, he had a contract with me, he belonged to me, he was supposed to be, he stole some money from me perhaps to go flee, and I've been wronged. He's prone to view this one way. And Paul is helping him say, remember the doctrine of providence. What if it's not just Onesimus who is acting? What if God is acting? What would that imply? Well, it would imply, number two, an appeal to a providential purpose. Because if God is acting, then he's acting for a reason. God never acts without a reason. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. That tells us he has a purpose. He doesn't act without a purpose. So notice how Paul subtly alludes to this with two phrases. For perhaps he was for this reason, the reason, separated from him. That's a purpose clause, that you would have in back forever. So by for this reason and so that, Paul's reminding Philemon, he's saying, what if, okay, Onesimus had his purposes for why he left you and why he robbed you and why he fled and did what he did. But what if not only God is acting in his acting, what if God is purposing in his purposing, so that now God has purposes in his leaving you and robbing you? This is Paul playing the role of Gandalf to Frodo. One of my favorite quotes there is, Frodo just sits down in discouragement as the way everything is happening. And no doubt many of you here have too. I know I have things I'm going through. And he says, I wish none of this had happened. I wish the ring had never come to me and none of this had happened. And you remember what Gandalf says? So do all who live to see such times. But that's not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that's given to us. Bilbo, notice the language Tolkien's weaving in here from the Bible, was meant to find him. And notice the inferencing. In which case, you also were meant to have it. That is an encouraging thought. And he adds in there, there's other forces in this world besides the will of evil. So the doctrine of providence is what's running through those stories. And he's reminding him there, and Paul's doing that here. Philemon, what if God is acting and Onesimus is acting? And what if God is purposing and meaning something? So what you have to get in mind is Bach, when here's the real core thing that we miss. So you might be thinking, you haven't shared anything new. And maybe I haven't, but consider this. In Bach's musical offering, some of the lines in there had something that he used to do called puzzles. And it would be the same line of melody, but so it's just one line of melody across there. But out to the margin, he would write something like a little note, if you seek, you will find. And so people would buy these, and they'd have to kind of crack the code, almost like there's another way to play these notes that they make a completely different melody, completely different sound. So there's the kind of the regular way it looks, but if you play it correctly in the way that there's another way to play it, play something completely amazing and different. That's the idea that Paul is working with. When I say Onesimus is acting and God is also acting, Onesimus is purposing something and God is also purposing something. We mean through the identical action, through the very same scenario, God is acting. God is acting in that act. That's the thing. So it's not concurrence. We might think, okay, there's the God current and the man current. It's not like that. It's more like Bach's single melody, so that in one melody, there's this way of looking at it and there's another way of looking at it. Okay, what would that imply? That would imply the third appeal. Notice there's this one, number three, is an appeal to a providential gift. Notice the contrast here. When I was a little boy, I used to marvel at throwing boomerangs, go to the monster trucks and people throw boomerangs. Just the fact that it would come back. But I never saw one come back better than it left. And that is what is going on here. Notice he says, perhaps he was for this reason separated from you. Notice this contrast. For a while, that you would have him back forever. For a while, forever. Verse 16, no longer as a slave, but more than slave, a beloved brother. Paul is suggesting to Philemon, I know you're hurt. I know you're wounded. I know there's a tendency to not forgive and be bitter and be hopeless. But what if Onesimus had just stayed with you, served the rest of his life, and died in his sins? Would that have been good? What if he had his own purpose? It's like Joseph's brothers. They had their own purpose in why they sold him to the Ishmaelites. I mean, they had their purpose. But God had different purposes. So, what if he needed to leave so that he could run into the Apostle Paul, whom you love? Remember the very beginning of this, Paul talks about how Philemon loved ministering to Paul and loved refreshing his heart in the Lord. What if the reason he needed to leave was so that he would run into me, so that he would become a Christian, so that he would then be a blessing to me, so that he would then need to go back and he could experience forgiveness from you, so that you now have him as a way of blessing me. And by the way, I'll pay all his debts. So you're not going to lose anything. So what if all of this happened just to put on display the gospel and allow you to love me and free him? And that's what was going on in this. Just, he's like tongue-in-cheek saying, just perhaps that's what the Lord was doing. I mean, isn't this the very same thing? What would this do? Look what it did to Joseph. Joseph's brothers come back. I mean, like, we have a new son. Like, imagine my daughter never gets to see. He grows up. She's separated from him. You imagine hurting someone that bad? Like, taking their sibling away from the growing up. They just miss it. Joseph knew this same melody doctrine, this concurrence, because we know that because he tells his brothers, you meant it for evil. God meant it for good. Notice it's the same it. So the way we're supposed to think as Christians is, in every action, there's another action. In every purpose, there's another purpose. In everything that's done to me, there's another thing being done to me. And Joseph ingested this so much, you remember he told him, y'all didn't even send me here. Don't make that big a deal about yourselves. You're not running the universe. Y'all are not that big a deal. And he told them, think of the love that came out of his heart. He said, y'all don't be discouraged on the way. Y'all don't beat yourselves. Can you imagine? He loved them. He said, I don't want you to be discouraged and fall into despair and depression and guilt. Don't become a Judas. I don't want you to just go hang yourself. Like, it's okay. I forgive you. I'm happy with what happened. Because now I'm in a place to bless our Father. Bring him up. The Lord did this to put me in this position so that I could give a gift to you guys. You guys. And they came to understand that the dreams he was having, they just took them one way, right? They're like, you're just having dreams of ruling over us. But that's not what God was revealing to them. God had been revealing himself to his people through dreams during this period and through history, and they didn't realize God was revealing through a dream that he was going to save them through his brother, through their brother. He was going to exalt their brother so that he could save them. So, what if? Notice the evil and good. You meant evil, God meant good. There's the offering. The king of Prussia meant something awkward to come out. But the melody was also in the creative hands of Bach. And so something completely better came out. And if that's the way all of reality is working, I mean, just one other example comes to mind. You remember in Galatians 4, Paul appeals to something Sarah said? She said, you know, cast out the woman and her son. And Paul says she was talking about casting out the Judaizers in his day. He quotes her words. I mean, think about that. You can't do that unless there's a double meaning. There's what Sarah meant by the words, which was something like, hey, we got our people and I don't want this kid in our house. We were going to do a classical education and we kind of had our family. Get him out. I don't want him in here. That's all she was thinking. And Paul is saying the way God's running the universe, he had another purpose in that part of the melody. She spoke better than she knew. If that's the way, if reality is rigged that way, what's the result? We get the fourth part of the appeal, the final part of the appeal, an appeal to a providential response. This doctrine Paul is pressing in on the heart of Philemon is meant to cause a response, and it's meant to cause a response in us as well. How do you see the response? Well, not just where he says in verse 20 where he brings it home and says, yes, let me benefit, let me be refreshed. I know you will do this and everything, but the word benefit is let me have some usefulness. The meaning of the name Onesimus is useful. So Paul, some of you dads like telling good puns. Paul's into puns. He's punning here. So he finds, and you could see that he's thinking this way from verse 11. He explicitly tells us he's thinking this way, who formerly was useless to you, but now is useful. So he's now lived up to his name. And we don't know why Onesimus' mom named him Onesimus. She had her purposes. But God had his purposes. You know the verses that were in my Bible reading today? Bible reading plan, Isaiah 49, 1 and 2 says that God names us. So again, his mother had a purpose in the name, and God had a purpose in the name. And our names are, they're about us. They're about our identity. We know that today, right? Get the pronouns right. People, we know about nouns. Nouns are important. Well, Paul is pressing, I just want you to see, Paul's pressing this doctrine into the soul of not only Onesimus, because I can't think that Paul literally pondered that for Onesimus without pondering the meaning of Philemon's name either. Philadelphia, Phileo, just means the one who loves. The mon ending just means it's a name. So Philemon is the one who loves, the brother who loves. So it's really an Esther moment. Paul is saying, as Esther realized, it dawned on her, she was put in this place for such a time as this. He's trying to get Philemon to realize, Philemon, what if all of this happened? God is conspiring to put you in this position. You were destined to do this good deed. What if that? Well, the result would be for his heart to just, it's total perspective shift. I mean, it's like he went from being bitter and maybe depressed and discouraged, and all he could see was the wrong done to him by Onesimus, to now have a chance to love Paul. He comes back as a brother. I have a chance to free him. Paul's going to pay all the debts. God did this amazing thing. And so now his heart can be released and free because he's rediscovered this doctrine that's supposed to make us invincible. It's supposed to make us invincible. Remember Hebrews 13, let your character be free from the love of money, being content with what you have. For he has said, I will never leave you, I will never forsake you, so that we may confidently say, the Lord is my helper, I will not be afraid, what can man do to me? It's that kind of a, what can man do to me? But simply provide a melody that they mean one way, and God is going to do something beautiful through it. That's all you can do, is just give me more line. So that's all anyone can do. If someone curses you, if someone wrongs you, someone cheats on you, someone commits crime against you, I mean, it, whatever they do, it becomes part of your story, and God is playing something totally different, and he is giving you a providential offering. That's what he's doing. So, in conclusion, there's two ways to look at the world. There's the view from below and the view from above. Ecclesiastes, right? I remember one of my experiences as a boy, my mother, Mother's Day, we're all thinking about our moms. My mother was into cross stitching. So I'd be on the floor, you know, playing with my little cars or He-Man figures, whatever was going on, you know. And I would sometimes look up, and if you've ever seen the old cross stitching, it's got like this wooden thing around it, and it just strings are hanging down under here, right? You look up, you're like, what is she doing? But if you turn it around, you see the beautiful picture. So Paul is trying to get Philemon to stop looking at it from the human side, from what only we can figure out. Remember Job, where were you and who are you? And how can Sinclair Ferguson said basically what God tells Job is, if I wrote the formula out on the board, Job, would you even be able to understand it? No. You can't see how all things are related. But we're supposed to know that the one that runs the universe hung on the cross for us. The one that steers the courses of time does it with nail-pierced hands. And that seems like someone we can trust. So we can have the childlike faith of, well, how is it going to work together for good? We can say, somehow. It was the error in the garden to want to know all the ways how. That's not. It's us to know that He loves us, that He's beautiful, that He's powerful, that He's sovereign, that nothing can harm us, that even this situation here, which is just written here to give us a concrete example, it's to bring all the theology from Colossians. These two books came together. Bring Colossians down to earth. It's meant to be applied in the four corners of the home, in the little everyday deeds, not just at the conferences and on Sunday morning. So that means it's meant not just for Lehman, but for us. So as we think about that, I just encourage you all studying these verses this morning to think about what it is that maybe a line of melody in your life that you wish wasn't there. And could the Apostle Paul, as he's talking to Philemon, possibly remind you this morning that a little pastoral reminder, there's someone else acting in every action. There's someone else intending in every intention. There's someone else producing something in everything that's being produced. And if that's the way reality is, I think your heart should be freed from bitterness, depression, and there should just gush within a release of, I'm being done good. This is my one life that is given to me by God, and He's creating this wonderful thing to give it to me. I can trust Him. I can release myself from this and do good deeds, even in the face of evil, and really mean them. So, wherever you are, the Lord knows. As we just sang, one little word shall fail him. May this one little word from Philemon be a blessing within your soul. Amen.